The second part of the life and strange adventures of Robinson Crusoe of York, mariner, who lived many years on an uninhabited island on the coast of America, near the mouth of the great river Orinoque, with an account how he was at last as strangely delivered by pirates. Written by himself.
If ever a man was born to be his own destroyer, then I, Robinson Crusoe, am he. Against the good advice of my father, I went to sea. I forgot the terror that possessed me in my first voyage and sailed into danger and calamity again. Even after making my fortune in the Brazils, my heart still yearned to wander, and I set sail on an illicit voyage to buy Negroes. I heeded not the captain's warning of a storm, but pressed on.
I say we turn the boat and make for Brazil.
It is as far to return as to go on. Head north for the Caribbean islands.
Very well, Mr. Crusoe. We are in God's hands now.
God did not spare us. That night we foundered upon a sandbank close to a rocky shore, and we were cast into the sea. I managed to swim to the shore, but all my comrades were lost. With supplies scavenged from the wreck of the ship, I made my home in a small cave at the base of a cliff. I discovered my haven was an island bounded by sea, without human inhabitants or savage beasts. At first, all my thoughts were of escape, but in time I learned to acquiesce in the dispositions of Providence. The years sped by. My life was pleasing and without surprise. I enjoyed my solitude. By my reckoning of the days, 25 years of my exile had passed, when I happened upon that which wrecked my serenity as surely as the storm that had cast me ashore. It cannot be. Toes, heel, in every way the print of a man's naked foot in the sand. Just one, and no other, and no sign of a boat. How? Do they live here? How many? They may be watching. I must hide. I must get back to my stockade. Hurry!
We present Robinson Crusoe by Daniel Defoe. Dramatized for radio by Steve Chambers. With Roy Marsden as Robinson Crusoe and Tom Bevan as young Crusoe. Episode 2.
Raise the ladder. Make sure all my guns are loaded and ready. We're besieged.
Damnation,
it is, Paul. Who owns that footprint? Can it be Satan himself come to tempt and torment me? For how could any human thing come to this lonely place and then leave just one footprint? But if it's a man, is he alone? Or with a band of fellows who will destroy my corn or eat my goats? Do they settle? Or are they visitors? On my perambulations in calmer times, I had observed on clear days a great landmass some 10 leagues to the west, which I presume must be the coast of America, somewhere near the mouth of the great river Orinoco. If they have been once, they will return in larger numbers and overwhelm me. And if they do not see me, they must find evidence of my presence, my corn, my candle. From now on, our evenings must be endured in darkness, Paul. Tonight I shall sleep with my sword at my side, a dagger and a pistol under my pillow. How strange a checkerwork of providence is the life of a man, Paul. Today we love what tomorrow we hate. Today we desire what tomorrow we fear. Nay, even tremble at the apprehensions of. Well, good night. Though I don't suppose I shall sleep much this night, or any night from henceforth, Paul. They may not kill me. I may be taken prisoner and used as a slave in some dreadful manner. It happened before, when I was still a young man. I was in charge of a merchantman just out of the Canary Islands, bound for the coast of Africa.
Ship off the port, please! Ship off the port, please!
Pass me my glass, Mr. Crusoe.
Aye, aye, Mr. Mate. Can you make her out?
She's coming this way, fast. Have a look yourself.
Strange-looking craft.
Ah.
With a shoulder of mutton mainsail. Ever seen a vessel like that before?
Oh, aye. I once saw a captured Turkish rover out of Saleh. Looked just like that.
Crowd on all the canvas we can!
Pirates! You think we can run before them?
Oh, we can try.
Loose those yards, lads. Get a move on! There's a Turkish rover after you, gizzards!
They're still gaining on us.
We've run before them these 5 hours, Mr. Crusoe. They'll be upon us well before dark.
Do pirates take prisoners, Mr. Mate?
Depends on how vexed they are.
The African coast is 2 days hence, and the Turk bars our passage to the Canary Islands.
Can you count their cannon, Mr. Crusoe?
One, two... I make nine.
Nine each side, 18 in all, and we have 12.
Six a side. You mean to fight?
Well, they do. But if we're sly and shorten our foresails, which the Turk cannot see...
We will slow down.
Aye, I'm thinking we may be able to spring a surprise upon those devils.
They will overhaul us. I do not see your purpose, Mr. May.
But in their haste, they may be induced to come athwart our beam, where we may get off a broadside at them before they know it.
And we may sink them?
Aye, possibly.
Gunnar! Unship our cannon! Load them ready for firing!
Aye, aye, mister!
They're almost upon us, Mr. Crusoe. Let's pray that she takes the bait and comes athwart our starboard side.
Every man is armed and ready, but out of sight. It's working, Mr. Mate.
Come on, my beauty. A little more. Wait for it.
Oh, heavens. There must be 200 of the devils.
Wait for it.
We did it!
Keep calm! Firing back.
Their aim is short.
Not that short, Mr. Crusoe.
Fire again!
They're sheering off, Mr. Mate.
Keep calm!
They'll be back for their prize. Rest assured.
You're right. They're coming about.
Yeah, they won't make the same mistake twice. This time they'll come at us head on. Try and ram us.
Heaven preserve us.
Stand by to repel boarders. Let them have it with every bit of small shot we've got. Look lively, lads.
Here they come.
The rover hit us astern and landed about 60 devils upon our quarter, who immediately fell to hacking our masts and our rigging. Outnumbered 5 to 1, we fought for our lives with guns, cutlasses, half-pipes, powder chests, anything that came to hand.
Pull up your sword, Mr. Crusoe. We're obliged to yield.
Stop firing, lads!
We cannot give up!
Look, 8 of our men are killed, 20 wounded, and our ship is disabled beyond repair. Cease fire!
Hold on fire!
The days after the discovery of the footprint were a turmoil of doubt and fear. I hid in my cave, too frighted to venture forth, except on brief excursions. I never went without my gun, although I did not use it for fear of alerting my enemies, but took to snaring game and fishing. Each morning, I climbed the hill behind my cave and spied my island, always looking towards the west to see if there were any visitors. I see it clearly now. The footprint was a vision sent to be a test of my faith. For what mortal man can leave one footprint on an entire shore? Fear of danger is 1,000 times more terrifying than danger itself. The air is good and fresh. The sun shines, the sea is perfect. My island is a garden of Eden.
It was my custom on these occasions to check the horizon for ships. As I swung my glass around, I was suddenly startled. Smoke. Coming from my side of the island. I've made no fire today. If that is made by men, they are close to my castle. I must discover the situation. I hurried back down the hill in great haste until I came to a clearing in front of my stockade where I could get a better view. 9 naked savages dancing round a fire, which is not for warming them, for the day is extreme hot. 2 canoes hauled upon the shore. I sat and watched them for an age, concerned lest they discover me, but they were too impassioned on their own activity and did not leave their beach. Their fire must be for cooking, but I can see no game of any sort. Curious. Something's happening. Are they going? Yes, they're pushing their canoes into the water. Strange. I count but 8 bodies where I counted 9 before. I watched them paddle away, all the time in high spirits. Then I went down to the place where they had been. Blood. Bones. A hand. A human skull. 9 came hither, 8 left after eating and devouring their fellow with great merriment and sport. Cannibals! I was so overcome with indignation that I ran about in a fury, full of murderous revenge. When my energy was spent, I hurried back to my cave and pulled up my ladder and made all things without look as wild and natural as I could. My indignation remained, however. I never thought to see butchered human flesh fresh off the spit, or smell the stench of it. Load my fowling pieces with swan shot, my pistol with 4 bullets, and 2 lead slugs in my musket. If I shot when they're close together, I may see off several at once, and with surprise, maybe 6 or 7. But supposing they sent another crew to look for the first, I may kill 10, 20, 50, and still they may come, and I will be no less a murderer than they are man-eaters, and perhaps much worse. And suppose I were to fall into their heathen hands, Paul? I think I know what may become of me then. Aye, Paul. For many days, I lived in a military manner, patrolling at dawn and dusk, carrying my arsenal with me, until at length my passion waned. One evening, returning from my patrol, I held a council of my thoughts. These savages have been suffered by Providence to have no other guide than their own abominable and vitiated passions. And Crusoe has set himself up as judge and executioner on his island. But by whose authority? These people do not commit this as a crime. They do not know it to be an offence and then commit it in defiance of divine justice, as we do in almost all the sins we commit. Now, Paul. These cannibals may be brutish and inhumane, but they've done me no injury. Therefore, Paul, it would be unjust of me to fall upon them. If I may not kill these savages, perhaps I may leave them. Escape, Paul. That's my new intention. I accomplished it before when my ship was captured by Turkish pirates all those years ago.
We were taken as prisoners into Saleh, a port belonging to the Moors, where my change in circumstance from merchant to slave, cheerful to melancholy, was completed. The usage I had at the hands of my captors was not so dreadful as at first I apprehended, nor was I carried up the country to the Emperor of Morocco's court, as the rest of our men were.
Why is your mouth turned down, English?
I do not like being your slave, Captain.
You will teach me to speak English like a Christian.
What need does a pirate have to speak English?
I speak many languages. It is useful in my profession.
Will you take me with you on your next voyage?
No. When I am away, you shall tend my garden.
What if I try to escape?
To the north and east, there is the great desert. To the south, impenetrable jungle full of wild beasts and savage tribes. And to the west, the ocean. Escape is impossible.
I see.
And I see a dangerous look in your eye, English. If you are caught trying to flee, we will fill your mouth with sand and you will die. So think no more of escape, eh? You are a gardener now.
But escape was all I thought of. Although nothing presented itself to make the supposition of it rational. Then after 2 years, an odd circumstance put the old thought back into my head.
We are here, English. Come, bring those baskets with you.
Yes.
There. Well, what do you think of her?
I cannot see.
Then put your burden on the dock and look.
My longboat.
With some refinements, no?
Indeed.
I was presented with my former ship's longboat, newly fitted out with a mast and a small stateroom like that of a barge, and a place to stand behind it where a man may haul home the mainsheet.
It is very fine.
And look, English, a compass to plot our course.
Where are we going?
Fishing in the bay. Now, bring the provisions aboard and let us get underway.
The captain used these trips constantly, once or twice a week if the weather was fair. I grew to like him. But the idea of escape was never far from my thoughts. Confident of his safety, my patron left a fowling piece aboard and many times shot fowl with it. I was frequently sent ahead with the supplies, and I took the opportunity to conceal extra water and biscuits under the bed in the stateroom.
We are a long way out today.
There is better fishing out here.
Bigger fish, yes. It is fitting.
Why is it fitting, Captain?
This is my last trip, English. Tomorrow I set sail on a new voyage to plunder Christian treasure.
You have fitted out your ship, then?
Had a ward from the Emperor.
I see.
We must start back. I have things to prepare. You must become a gardener again, no?
No. Yes. Oh, look!
What is it?
A fish on my line. A big one.
Take the tiller. Give me your line. Hurry, English, or we will lose it.
As he grabbed hold of my line, I stepped behind him. The moment he saw the line had nothing on it, he half turned to me, his eyes full of surprise. This was my moment. I seized him by the waist and tipped him overboard.
No, English! Oh! English! English! Do not leave me here!
Get away from the boat, Captain!
I will go all over the world with you, English. I will be your slave. Do not leave me here. I beg you. I will drown.
He swam like a cork and would have reached me very quickly, so I ducked into the cabin, took up the fowling piece and presented it to him.
I have done you no hurt, Captain. And we'll do you none if you stay quiet and swim to the shore.
I have treated you well.
The sea is calm. Make the best of your way to the shore.
You know what will happen if you are caught.
Aye. But if you come near to the boat, I will shoot you through the head. But I am resolved to have my liberty.
I believe you are, English. I believe you are. Goodbye, English.
I had no doubt that he reached the shore with ease, for he was an excellent swimmer. Would that I had a south wind, for I could have made for Cadiz. But the wind was from the northwest and my way south into the unknown. The sea was calm and the wind fair, and I let my course follow the shore, so that after a day and a night I calculated I must be 150 miles to the south of Saleh and quite beyond the Emperor of Morocco's dominions. I sailed thus for several more days until my food and water were gone, and I was quite lost and my hope low.
A sail! It is a sail! Christian or Turk,
Portuguese by the look of her. Ahoy there! Ahoy! Ahoy there!
I crowded on all the sail I could make and fired my fowling piece to alert their attention.
They're shortening sail and turning towards me. They have seen me. They have seen me.
And so I was delivered. It was an inexpressible joy to me, and I immediately offered all I had to the Portuguese captain, but he would take nothing, for he had delivered me on the same terms as he would be glad to be saved himself. I journeyed with him to the Brazils, where I settled and made my fortune, only to lose it again through my own willfulness.
So you see, Pop, if I escape before, I may do so again. Although I confess my resolve has waned considerable after attempting my canoe. I'm most vexed for want of a companion to assist my labours.
One morning, while searching for a suitable tree to enlarge my dugout, I was surprised with seeing no less than 5 large canoes all on shore together on my side of the island, and the people who belonged to them all landed and out of sight. I crept to the brow of a small hillock overlooking my creek and spied with my perspective glass.
No less than 30 savages in number, and they've a fire kindled. And to one side, 2 wretches looking most miserable. One of them is being led forward. He's been felled with a club. Oh! 2 others are cutting him open for their cookery. Oh! Abomination!
As I watched in horror, the other victim, as I now perceived him, was left standing till they should be ready for him. Seeing himself a little at liberty, nature inspired him with hopes of life, and he started away from them.
He runs with incredible swiftness. 3 of his fellows are following. Go on, my lad, go on! He's outstripping them. He's reached a creek. One now. He swims very fast, and his pursuers have reached the creek. One cannot swim and is turning back, but 2 continue. They're not as swift as their quarry. Oh, no. The fugitive has turned away from the shore and comes up the hill towards my castle. What am I to do? Am I called by Providence to save this creature's life? Well, if I do not, I may be discovered in my castle and overthrown.
I was dreadfully frightened, but decided that I must intervene. Accordingly, I set off down the hill with all speed.
He comes now. I let him get some distance beyond me and then hailed him. Ahoy there! You lad! Come here! Come here, I say! Do not be afraid. I will help you. I intend you no harm. Your enemies are upon us. Hold! Hold! Stand, I say, stand!
The first of his pursuers burst into the small clearing and stopped in surprise at the sight of me. I own I was a strange apparition, clad in goatskin jerkin, cap and shoes, and possessed of a great grey mane and beard. I was loath to use my gun and alert his fellows at the camp, and so rushed at him and knocked him down with the stock of my piece, just as his companion appeared. He stared at me in wonder.
Stand still!
I advanced a pace towards the second pursuer and perceived that he had a bow and arrow, and having observed the state of his fellow, was placing an arrow in his bow.
Stand still, and I will do you no harm. And put down your bow and arrow. Put it down, or I will shoot you. Oh!
I turned back to the savage I had saved and found him standing still and very frightened. I beckoned to him.
Come here. Come on. That's it. Bit nearer. Go on. I'm not going to hurt you. Come on. Come to me. The poor wretch is trembling with fear. I am not going to kill you. I have defended you from your enemies. That's better. Now come to Crusoe.
He advanced slowly towards me, bending down every 10 or 12 steps in token of acknowledgement. I smiled at him and looked pleasantly, but given the extremity of my apparel, this gave more fright than comfort. I beckoned him to come nearer still, which he did, and then kissed the ground and, taking me by the foot, placed it upon his head.
What's this? You swearing to be my slave forever? Well, see, the pursuer I knocked down is coming to his senses.
I raised my fowling piece, and my savage, for so I called him now, appeared very much afraid and took to trembling. He shook his head with great vigour and pointed to my sword, which hung naked at my side.
What? You want my sword? Here. Take it.
He took my sword and ran at his enemy and cut off his head. Most cleanly, no executioner could have done it better.
What's so funny? Heavens, he's offering me the head. No! No, I do not want it! No, take it away! No! I'm not angry. I just do not want the head. We must bury them in case their fellows come looking for them.
I gestured to him and he understood, for he straightway dug two shallow graves in the sand with his hands and buried his enemies. He was most astonished by the one I had shot, and before burying him turned him first one way and then t'other, and looked at the small hole in the breast the bullet had made. Afterwards he took up the bow and arrows, and we returned to a grove close to my cave.
Here, bread, and a bunch of raisins to eat, see? Hmm? Now you. Sit. and water to drink. You have a thirst in your flight. That's good, eh? Now we will rest here and hide from your enemies. This is the first time I have sat in company these 28 years.
I now had the chance to consider my new companion and to speak with him, and although he did not understand me, yet it was most satisfying.
I shall call you Friday for the memory of your deliverance, for today is, by my reckoning, Friday. And you shall call me Master. You, Friday, me, Master. You, Friday. You, Fried.
Friday.
Good, very good. Me, Master. Master.
Master.
Excellent. You are a comely, handsome fellow, Friday, with a good countenance. Not a fierce and surly aspect, but something very manly in your face. Yet there is much sweetness and softness and a great vivacity and sharpness in your eyes, especially when you smile and laugh. You are well made, with straight long limbs, tall and well shaped, and I would reckon about 25 or 6 years of age. And the colour of your skin is very tawny, a bright kind of a dun olive colour, which has something in it which is most agreeable. Why, I see you're very fatigued. Look, there's a great parcel of straw over yonder, see? And a blanket upon it. Well, I often sleep here myself. Lie down here and sleep, eh? Well, do not be afraid, Friday.
Friday.
Yes. You, Friday. Me, Master.
Master.
Now, lie down and rest.
He did as I suggested and went straight away to sleep and slept all that day and on until the next morning. I slept the night in my fortification with my ladder withdrawn, and when I awoke, I wondered if Friday would be gone, for the day of his deliverance seemed like a dream.
Oh, Friday, you're still here. I have some breakfast for you. Goat's milk and bread. Now, I think I must find you some clothes, for it's unsettling to see you stark naked, and ungodly for you to be so.
I returned to my cave and sorted out a few things and brought them back for him.
I've some linen drawers which belong to the gunner of my ship. Here.
Master.
No. Not on your head. Look, look, like this. Look, see? I put my leg through this hole and then my other leg through that one. Now, you try.
He took the drawers and struggled with them, for they were most foreign to him. But finally, he wore them.
That's good. Your nakedness is covered. Now, here is a goatskin jerkin. It's an old one of mine, so it may be small. Here, put your arms through the holes like this.
This he managed easily, although in truth it was a little small for him, but I resolved to enlarge it at my leisure and handed him a cap made of hair which he wore at a rake and was most pleased at his appearance.
I must say you look very well and not unlike me. Pick up the bow and arrow and you may carry my sword. Good. Now, follow me.
We came to a vantage point and I spied the beach where the savages had drawn up their canoes.
Gone, so it would appear. It seems they rarely spend a night here. I'm curious and have a mind to get a fuller intelligence of them. There are two of us, both armed. Come Friday.
We marched down the hill past the place where Friday had buried his pursuers. I went on, but Friday stopped and became excited.
Master!
Well, Master! What is it? You want to dig them up? What for? Well, to eat them? No, I say. Do not be afraid, Friday. I mean you no harm, but I will not countenance that degeneracy. Leave them where they are.
We continued on until we came to the stony foreshore where Friday's captors had held their feast.
Look at this dreadful sight. Bones, half-eaten flesh, the ground covered in blood. Why do you smile, Friday? This is most dreadful, but it means little to you. Gather up the remains and make a pile of them.
By gesture and demonstration, I communicated my desires, which Friday then carried out most easily. We made a great fire and burnt the remains all to ashes. As we watched the pyre, Friday, in like manner, explained how he had come to be a prisoner. His captors had brought over four prisoners to feast upon, and three of them were eaten up, and he was the fourth. There had been a great battle between his captors and the next king, of whom Friday was one of his subjects. Many prisoners were taken and carried off, so that they may be feasted upon as was done here.
Your stomach still hankers after such flesh, Friday. I must teach you everything that is proper to make you useful, handy, and helpful. And so that you may distinguish good from evil, I must make you speak English, and so understand me when I speak.
And so began my lessons. I set him to work beating some corn out and sifting it in the manner I used to do. And in a little time, Friday was able to do all the work for me as well as I could do it myself. I made a wooden frame with a door to my cave so that at night I could withdraw and be safe within, and he could sleep sheltered without. But I needed none of this precaution, for never a man had a more faithful, loving, sincere servant than Friday was to me. In time, he began to talk pretty well, and I began to have some use for my tongue again.
Friday, you've harvested the corn quickly and diligently.
What do you want Friday to do now, Master?
Well, there are two mouths to feed now instead of one, so we need more corn.
Yes, Master. I go now. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
What are you doing?
I mark out larger piece of land, plant more corn.
It needs to be worked and fenced and planted first.
I know, Master. I go now. 6, 7, 8.
He's a hard-working and cheerful worker and learns most swiftly.
He was the aptest scholar that ever there was, except when it came to religion.
Stop your work a while, Friday. Have some water.
I have not finished chopping this wood yet.
I want to talk to you about something, Friday. I want to tell you about my God and divine providence.
What is providence, Master?
It was providence which made me the instrument to save your life. And who knows, your soul. Providence is the hand of God at work.
What is God, Master?
God? God is the father of everyone and everything.
Ah, my father lived beyond the hills. Is he God?
No.
Friday not understand.
All right. Who made the sea, the ground we walk on, the hills, and the woods?
Old Ben Amuki, who lives beyond all.
Well, what is he like, this Ben Amuki?
Him very old. Older than sea or land or moon or stars.
What happens to the people who die in your country? Do they go anywhere?
Yes, all go to Ben Amuki.
And those that are eaten up, do they go too?
Yes, Master.
Does he speak to you, this Ben Amuki?
He speaks with the old men high up in the mountains.
Friday, the great maker of all things is not Ben Amuki. It is my God who lives up there in the heavens, who gives all things to us and takes all things from us. He hears every word we utter.
Him much might.
Yes, Friday, him much might.
If your God hears everything beyond the sun, he needs must be a greater God than Ben Amuki.
Ben Amuki is a cheat, an evil spirit, a product of the devil. He does not speak to your old men.
What is devil, Master?
The evil one who, when the world was young, rebelled against God and now lives in the dark places of the world, plotting God's downfall.
You say your God is strong, fellow?
Yeah. He's all-powerful.
If God much strong, much might as the devil, why does he not kill the devil and make him do no more wicked?
Master? Well, that's a question.
Master, answer!
Oh, did you hear something over yonder, Friday? No matter how I tried, I could not get beyond Friday's obstruction. God knows I had more sincerity than knowledge in the poor creature's education, and I prayed to God that he would enable me to instruct him. I must acknowledge that in laying things open to Friday, I informed and instructed myself in many things I did not know or had not considered before.
Bonny rowan tree are all growing bravely in the North Country.
This is the happiest time I've had on my island, Friday. You are my true friend and companion.
Friday happy too, Master.
Here we are, the summit of my mountain. On a clear day you can see the great landmass to the west. There it is. See?
Oh, joy. Oh, glad. Oh, joy, Master.
Well, it makes you happy, Friday.
See my country. See my nation. Oh, joy.
Do you wish to go home?
This is my home, Master.
Do you wish yourself in your own country?
Oh, yes, Master. I'd be much glad to be there.
Well, what would you do there? Would you turn wild again?
No, Master.
Would you forget all that I've taught you?
No, Master.
Would you eat men's flesh again and be as savage as you were before?
No. Friday tell them to live good, to pray God. Eat cornbread and goat flesh, no eat man again.
I do not believe you.
Why, Master, angry?
I am not angry.
Master, angry. Friday not know why. Friday sorry.
You have nothing to reproach yourself for.
Why, Master, angry then?
I have no claim on you, but I have grown to depend on you. Would you go back to them?
I cannot swim so far.
You could go in a canoe.
Friday go if Master go with him.
Why, then they will eat up both of us.
We tell them no. They no kill us. They willing learn.
Well, surely there's much danger in crossing the sea.
No. In morning, current and wind bring canoe here. In evening, take canoe back.
That's why the savages come in the morning and leave in the evening. It must be a tidal surge.
One day, sea bring white mans to our nation.
Men like me?
Yes, with whiskers like Master. Come in small boat, not canoe.
What became of them?
They dwell in my nation now.
They haven't been eaten up?
No. They fight in war as brother.
And they are there now, these white men?
Yes, still there.
White men like me? Spaniards or Portuguese, I expect, but together we may be able to make the Caribbean islands. I must go.
Friday, come?
Yes, we will make a large canoe and you will return to your nation and I shall return to mine.
Friday, come with master?
No, you must stay with your nation.
Here, master. Take sword. Kill me now.
Why must I kill you, Friday?
Why you send Friday for? Kill Friday. No, send Friday away.
Did you not say you wanted to return to your nation?
Yes. We should both be there. Friday and master.
I wish to join with the white men. That's all.
You do great good. Teach wild mans to be sober. Tame mans. Tell him pray God. Live new life. Now what, leave Friday? No!
Friday. I am but an ignorant man. And I have taught you all I know.
Not send Friday away.
All right. I swear I will not send you away.
We stay together?
Yes. We stay together. Friday! Where are you? It's all right, Paul. No need to be alarmed. I brought you outside to give thanks to Almighty God, this being the second anniversary of Friday's deliverance. He's nowhere to be found. Friday! We shall just have to start without him, eh, Paul? Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name.
Oh, Master! Master!
Where have you been, Friday?
I went to the beach to get turtle. Oh, bad, bad.
This is your day of Thanksgiving and you went to get a turtle. Why?
As a sacrifice to God, give thanks with turtle.
You see? Let us pray.
No, Master, you know, see, I see.
What on earth are you talking about, Friday?
A boat, come to island.
You mean a canoe?
No. Come look, see from hill.
I followed Friday to a small rise and gazed out at the bay beneath and the ocean beyond.
There, Master.
You're right, Friday. It isn't a canoe. It looks like a longboat with a sail. It is. And oh, my heavens.
What is it, Master?
Look. Standing off about a league, a ship lying at anchor. It looks like an English ship. After so long.
Master, look through glass?
Yes, my lady. It is. An English ship manned by my own countrymen. I never thought, say, Englishman Friday. Why do you look so somber?
Why did they come here? Savage mans come here, do bad things. Why English mans come?
That's a good question. What business does an English ship have in this part of the world, far away from where the English have any traffic? And there be no storms to drive them hither.
Boat coming to shore, Master. You meet them?
No. We will return to our cave and arm ourselves. We will not declare our intention until we have spied theirs.
Backwater! Backwater! All right, lads. Get ashore. Bring our honored guests with you. Here, look not so glum, Captain. This be your new home.
I'll see you burn in hell, Will Fry.
Bo'sun Fry to you. Now get ashore. Look, lads. Our captain's lost his sea legs on account of them being bound together. You too, Mr. Mate. Don't keep your captain waiting.
Careful with him, bosun.
Eh?
We agreed not to hurt him.
Cast them away on an island. That's what we agreed, Will.
You shut your row, Higgins. I knows you and Tom Smith are windy about our enterprise. So you can stay here together. Look after the longboat, you trouble. The rest of you scurvy devils, get ashore. Take our prisoners with you.
There are 14 men altogether. 10 on shore, 2 captives and 2 left in the boat.
English mans eat prisoner like savage mans?
No, Friday. I do not think they mean to eat them, but I am afraid they mean to murder them
They run round like savage mans.
It is the old way of sailors ashore. Drink rum and think only of today.
We wait, see what happened, Master?
Yes, Friday. There are too many to attack now. So we wait.
Here, have some rum, Swift.
Can we explore, Will?
You do what you like, lad. You're in charge now. Yeah, we all are.
What about our prisoners? Should we put a guard on them?
What for? Think they're going to get a Bow Street runner and arrest us?
The boatswain and his fellows have been gone a long time, Captain.
That they have.
What will they do with us?
Dead men tell no tales, Mr. Mate.
Surely they will not murder us. Will Fry swore he would not.
Boatswain Fry knows he will hang in chains as a mutineer if he is caught.
Oh, it is fearful hot. I wonder where they are.
They're all laid down to sleep, what with this heat and the rum they've consumed. Look at the longboat, Mr. Mate.
It is beached, Captain.
High and dry.
Oh, did you hear something? I heard something.
You there. Are you English?
They are come.
Hold on to your dignity, Mr. Mate. Yes, we are Englishmen. Who wants to know?
A friend you did not know you had.
He must be sent from heaven, then, for our condition is past the help of man.
All help is from heaven, sir, but if God had sent an angel to help you, he would have come better armed and better clothed than I. See for yourselves.
Great heavens, Lord.
Have you ever seen an angel wearing a goatskin jerkin and cap?
Who are you?
An Englishman who is disposed to assist you. I've one servant and some weapons. Now, what is your case?
I was commander of that ship. My men have mutinied against me. This is my first mate.
Have they any firearms?
They have three pieces. One left in the boat. They carry the others. Do you know where the brutes are?
They are asleep under a tree over yonder. We may kill them easily enough as they lie.
Better to take them prisoner, sir. Only Fry and Swift are desperate villains, but I believe the rest will return to their duty if they are secured.
It will be difficult. If I assist your deliverance, Captain, I insist on two conditions.
Name them, sir.
One, that while you stay on this island, you will not pretend to any authority here and be governed by my orders in all things.
Granted. And the second?
Oh, cut our bonds while you tell us, for pity's sake.
Come on, lads, stir yourselves. Look lively, you scurvy dogs. Captain Thompson. Captain Thompson?
They're not here, Bosun.
Well, we tied them securely. They must be here.
Well, they are gone.
Smith and Higgins, Bosun. That gun from the longboat.
And their weapon?
Gone too.
So that's the way of it. Those two dogs have turned the captain and the mate loose.
And that's not the worst of it, Bosun. They've taken the fresh water and stove a great hole in the bottom of the boat.
What?
We're stranded, then.
I'm awful thirsty.
Shut up for a moment. Let me think.
We could swim for it.
I can't swim. Anyhow, the ship's over a league away.
Hello! Hello there, white man!
What was that?
Does not sound like one of our lads.
Maybe the isle is enchanted after all.
Is the voice of a sprite?
Ah, of course it may be. That's no sprite. That's the mate.
Water!
Oh, water.
There's water! Clear water!
What shall we do, Will?
We shall go towards the sound.
It could be a trap.
No, we're ten. They're four. They have one weapon. We have two. We shall fight and overwhelm them.
And drink their water.
Aye. Now, follow me. And stay together!
Hello! Hello, mans! Over yonder lies cool water!
Water, lads! Water!
Friday and the mate have played their part well. It'll be dark soon.
And time to make our move. Are you ready, Captain? You know what to do.
Fire four rounds and then rush them. Friday and the mate will attack their flank.
The first shot will be their signal. When you're ready, Captain.
I told Bosun Fry he would burn in hell. I shall now dispatch him hence with a musket ball.
There followed a short engagement. Two were killed, three wounded, and two threw down their swords in terror when they beheld Friday.
Throw down your weapons, lads.
Your case is hopeless. Will Fry is dead, shot through the heart. Four more lie wounded.
We may as well fight. We got nothing to lose now.
All who yield shall be shown mercy, save Swift.
Why not I?
You were intent on my destruction.
All right, then. I throw my sword down for myself upon your mercy.
And I, there is my sword. I cannot stand alone. What will happen to me?
You shall be hanged in the morning, Swift.
Oh, no. I beg you, Captain. Show me mercy.
I may not. You are not my prisoner. You are all prisoners of the governor of this island.
Governor? Who is this gentleman?
A most grave and upright Englishman with a company of 20 soldiers.
He may not hang me without a trial.
The rest shall have a trial when they are sent back to England.
That means hanging, for sure.
Our victory won. Friday led my new subjects to my camp. I instructed him to give them sustenance and then bring the captain to me in my cave.
I'll warrant they never saw a governor dressed like me, Captain.
They believe you have an army and a palace.
This cave is my palace, castle, workshop, and home.
The story of your captivity is most amazing, but that you should be furnished thus with all that you need is like a miracle.
It's the hand of Providence,
Master!
Captain.
Master! Come quick!
What is it, Friday?
Ship fire gun!
Come, Captain.
We followed Friday to the edge of my fortification and looked down on the bay. The lights of the ship shone like tiny stars.
They're concerned for their comrades. We must return the signal.
Friday, go down to the shore with a lantern and fire your fowling piece.
Yes, Master.
Well, what next, Mr. Crusoe? Do you have a plan for the recovery of my ship?
How many are left aboard?
8, and the ship's boy.
How many can you depend on?
Higgins and Smith, and another 5 from the shore party. 7 in all.
That'll be enough. We shall repair the longboat, and you will sail out to the ship. Your men will make as if you and the mate are still prisoners.
We shall have surprise on our side. And if we are successful, Mr. Crusoe, you will return to England.
Yes. Yes, I will.
And so our plan was executed. Most of the mutineers aboard were insensible with drink, and the assault was pressed most easily. 2 resisted to the end, but the rest surrendered and made a piteous sight, especially when their comrade Swift was hanged from the yardarm. The sight of his corpse made a grave impression on the other mutineers.
Mr. Crusoe? Are you here?
I'm in the anteroom, Captain, trying on my new clothes.
How do you like my ship?
Oh, it's most fine.
Aha, I see you've sampled my luxuries.
I have the wine and the cheese, Captain, and they are excellent.
Then why are you vexed, sir? You look well with your hair cut and your new clothes.
Does any man wear shoes such as these without pain? Or such a collar without suffocation?
They are fine clothes, the finest I have.
Must they pinch and pull, sir?
It is not the fashion in England to wear a goatskin jerkin and hat. I see you have brought them aboard with you.
As relics, sir. Mementos of my stay.
Oh, your manservant is without. He wishes to speak with you.
Send him in.
A moment more of your time, Mr. Crusoe, concerning the fate of the mutineers.
What do you desire, Captain? To take them back to England in chains and watch them hang?
For the most part, no. They are good men led astray. But if I let them aboard, I must take them back.
I think the governor may devise an answer to your problem, Captain. Now send in Friday.
I will see you later, Mr. Crusoe.
You may enter now, Friday.
Oh, Friday, you brought me Paul. How now, Paul? How now?
Oh, now.
Well, what do you think, Friday? Do I look fine?
Look very fine.
Why do you look so glum?
Master, go home. Leave Friday.
I made a bargain with the captain. In return for our help against his enemies, he agreed to obey me on the island and to give free passage back to England.
For you, Master?
For both of us. If you desire to come with me.
We swear never part.
And we never shall. We never shall.
Friday!
Friday, go with Master!
Friday!
Dressed in my new finery, the captain introduced me as governor of the island. The mutineers begged me for permission to remain rather than return to execution. The captain pretended to deny them, and I to argue with him, which made them most grateful to me. I gave them provisions, some firearms, and an account of my survival, which included a map of the island. I bade them live honestly and humbly before God, reminding them I should in time return and judge them. And to this, they agreed most readily.
Unfurl the mainsail!
Aye, aye, Captain!
Set course east by northeast. We sail to England!
So, on the 19th of December, as I found by the ship's account, in the year 1686, I left my island. With Poll and my faithful servant Friday, I came safely home to my native shore, where I settled and in time came to record the strange and surprising adventures of Robinson Crusoe of York, Mariner.
In Robinson Crusoe by Daniel Defoe, dramatized for radio by Steve Chambers, Crusoe was played by Roy Marsden and young Crusoe by Tom Bevan. Friday was Lloyd Notis, the captain John Rowe, and Bosun Fry Christopher Wright. Swift was Ewan Thomas, the captain's mate Gerard McDermott, and the sailors Brian Parr and Alistair Danson. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The director was Marion Nancarrow.